Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of Retro Film Reviews. This one is one that I had been talking about for about a month now. Actually, I mentioned it last month when I did my Walmart video haul on the YouTube channel, if anyone wasn't, check that one out. And I am reviewing for the month of October this film, A Nightmare on Elm Street, the original from 1984. And if you're watching this on YouTube, yes, I am indeed wearing a Freddy Krueger glove. Freddy Krueger glove. That's a fast rest. It is real metal. Yes, it is. It's not sharp. I got this when I was working at the Ruby's Costume Company store in Queens, New York. And yeah, that was a lot of fun when I used to work there in 2008. But yes, my little Freddy Krueger glove. Freddy Krueger glove. God damn. Yeah, I'm recording this Wednesday night, October the 28th. You hear that on the microphone? Sorry. Ooh, sorry. Did not mean to do that. Yes, I'm going to be wearing this throughout the whole video, so... although throughout the whole podcast, because it's not just a video, you get the audio-only version on Spotify, Google Podcasts, CastBox Radio, Public Breaker, and Anchor. Yes. A Nightmare on Elm Street, the film debut of Johnny Depp, directed by the late, great Wes Craven, also starring Heather Langenkamp as Nancy, and of course Robert Englund as the antagonist of the franchise, Freddy Krueger. Now, I have not seen the remake of this film. I've not heard any good things about it at all, so eventually I'm going to check that one out and see how I feel about it. But A Nightmare on Elm Street, because I haven't seen the entire franchise. I've seen a few of the films and I've seen bits and pieces of the others, but honestly, it's like watching the first film, like, yes, based on the way it ended, I can see, yeah, you know, it called for a follow-up, but at the same time, if it was just a one and done, I would have been totally fine with it, because as the films progress from 2 to 3, 4, 5, 6, and so on, it got a little too goofy, and I know that a lot of people love the goofy Freddy Krueger stuff, especially in the later films. I think after the third one is when it starts to get super ridiculous, and like, yeah, and those films have their audience, but this film right here, this film, A Nightmare on Elm Street from 1984, was not a humorous film. Freddy Krueger was not depicted as a goofy character. He was not doing one-liners. He was a menacing being that murdered young children. In the remake, I know that there's elements of pedophilia that they decided to sprinkle in there. They do not go into detail about that in the original film, but they do say that, yes, he murdered children. They do not make any mention or any hints of pedophilia, although you can kind of assume based on just the fact that he targeted children specifically. But, excuse me. I've only seen this film a handful of times. I haven't seen it as many times as other horror films like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, both the original and the remake version, or any of the Halloween films, or some of the Saw movies. Yeah, like, I love horror movies, but I'm very selective about it, and I'll go into more detail about that on my Halloween podcast that I'm doing, well, horror movie podcast that I have coming out on Halloween Day, so be on the lookout for that. It's just, I do absolutely love this film, but at the same time, it's like, didn't really need any sequels, although I do love Nightmare 2 and Wes Craven's new Nightmare. It's just, yeah, didn't really need any sequels, but that's just my personal opinion. But anyways, not about that. This podcast is about this film individually right here. I'm going to read the quick synopsis for anyone who, you know, is not familiar with the film, which if you're watching this and you're a horror movie fan, you've seen this film at least once by now. But yes, yeah, 1, 2, Freddy's coming for you. And here he is, Phantom Friend Freddy Krueger in all his razor-fingered infamy. Wes Craven directs this trend-setting first in the slash hit series. The premise is simple. Freddy homicidally haunts the sleep of Elm Street Teens. The results are terrifying and mind-blowingly innovative. There's another film debut too, Johnny Depp. He plays the ready steady of the hottie McSmarty at the Langenkamp, Nancy, who figures a clever way to flambé the fiend. Fiend. But never say die, Freddy will be 3-4 back for more, even returning to the screen in a killer 2010 remake of this diabolical original. Yeah. Eventually I'll see that remake, but yes. Though, the way this film starts, it starts off with a nightmare, and it is from Tina, Nancy's friend, Nancy's best friend. Tina dreaming about him, and then she wakes up from her nightmare. Well, I mean, first, like, the way it starts out, you see him manufacturing the glove. You know, the same glove that I'm wearing. Well, not the same glove, but a similar glove that I'm wearing right now. And you see him, like, putting together the blades, the parts on the fingers, like, right there. And just he's crafting his weapon. And then we don't realize that Tina is having a nightmare until the scene keeps progressing. And then she finally wakes up and she has slashes in her nightgown, pajama gown. And she has a crucifix hanging over her bed, so she clutches to that to protect herself. And then we go to the next day where we get to meet Nancy and Glenn, and I believe the boyfriend's name was Riley. Tina's boyfriend, Riley, you know, Johnny Depp as Glenn was Nancy's boyfriend. And even though, like, for, I'm not sure if this is one of, this was Heather's, like, one of her first movies. I know it's still very early in her career. But you feel a genuine, you know, closeness with some of these actors and these characters, very similar to the original Halloween with Jamie, Linda, and Annie. How, you know, they're all very, they, you feel their closeness, you feel their friendship is genuine, and you feel that here as well. And I know Halloween was a big influence on Wes Craven, so, you know, that kind of makes sense. But I remember the inspiration for Nightmare on Elm Street was a newspaper article that he had read about a person in Japan that had died in his sleep. I don't remember exactly the exact details of it, but I just remembered that that story, you know, really triggered something in him, and that's where he was inspired to write this story. That's how I remembered it, at least. And you know, the gore in the film, it's really not as much gore as, you know, people might remember it being, because there's only 4 kills in this entire film. Is it 4? No, 3. Well, yeah, it's 4. It's 4 kills of the entire film. Of course, you know, the kill count would go much higher in the later, you know, films of the series, as it does in the slasher genre. But yeah, like the way and the other thing also, like, you know, because I mentioned New Nightmare earlier, a lot of the things that are featured in this film are, you get the homage or callbacks in Wes Craven's New Nightmare. That, you know, and I didn't realize that until, you know, many years later when I rewatched this film again for the first time after a very long time. Because for a while I'd had like a VHS tape recording of, you know, like all the old Viewer's Choice pay-per-view stuff that back in the 90s. That it was a VHS tape that it had The Mask, Wes Craven's New Nightmare, and Billy Madison. And my brothers and I, we always watched Wes Craven's New Nightmare, and I think I've probably seen that one more times out of any film of the Nightmare franchise. So once I got to rewatch the first film again, and I realized, oh yeah, that's where that moment is from. That's why that moment made, you know, was a big deal. Like the way Tina dies is very much like the way Julie dies in New Nightmare, where, you know, she's in her sleep, Well, Tina's in her sleep, after that, because they have a sleepover at the house. Nancy, Glenn, and Riley, they're all there, because they want to make sure she's safe and all that, as friends do. And then they, yeah, as she, sorry, as my mind's been a little fuzzy lately, the last few weeks, busy with work, so I'm a little out there, kind of, so please forgive me for my poor performance in this podcast. But anyways, then when she's, in her dream, and she, like, but again, we don't know that it's a dream yet, but we see her, coming out of her house into her yard. She walks through the yard into an alleyway behind the house, and she sees Freddy, where we get, one of those famous shots of him with his arms stretched out, and you get the glove, the claws scraping up against the metal, and you get that screeching sound. And we also get that famous scene where he cuts off one of his fingers and the green yucky stuff comes out. And he finally overtakes her and starts to, fuck her up there. And that's when Riley, I think his name was Riley. Because I literally just watched this a little over an hour ago. So, it should be fresh in my mind. But yeah, the boyfriend, he wakes up and sees her in bed, convulsing, kind of manner, and just like almost like she's having a seizure. And then he sees her chest just rip open with the claws, but he doesn't see him. He doesn't see Freddy. He just sees what is happening to Tina. The claws just rip through her chest, and then she's dragged off the bed, up the wall, onto the ceiling. Again, just like how Julie is in New Nightmare. That she's dragged across the ceiling, and then she drops down and is just dead. And boyfriend, freaking out, gets the fuck out of there, obviously. And Glenn and Nancy bust the door down, wanted to know what the fuck is happening. And they see Tina dead on the floor. And then we cut to the police station where we see John Saxon, or Jason Saxon. Is it Jason Saxon? Something Saxon. Yeah, John Saxon. Yeah, I got it right. Who plays Nancy's father. He's a part. He's a, I guess, I think he's a police chief or some shit like that. I don't know. He's there, concerned for his daughter, wanting to know why she was there. And, she's emotional. She's an emotional wreck. She's in tears. And she says, we were there to protect her. So then they put a warrant out, or an APB, on the boyfriend, because he's the prime suspect, as it normally would be in these cases, And so, yeah. And, and things like with the way it looked when you got the slice of the four claws on her chest. I'm going to take this glove off. It's starting to cramp up my hands a little bit. Ah. Oy. Sorry. But anyways, yeah. Oof. Now my hand is very heavy now. Anyways. Sorry. Catching my breath now. But, they get the APB on him, and Nancy's walking to school, and he pops out of the bushes, and, tries to convince her that, he didn't do anything. He did not kill her, that it was somebody else in there that killed her. And then we find out that her dad was, had a tail on her, basically, and was following her so that they can arrest him. And they do. And then she gets mad, storms off to school. And when we get one of the other famous scenes from here, where she falls asleep during class, and we see the body bag with, Tina's bloody body in there, calling out to Nancy. And she bumps into, and she starts to follow the blood trail and bumps into the hall monitor chick. She says, where's your hall pass or whatever? And then Nancy says, screw your pass. And again, that was another line and another thing that they do a callback for in New Nightmare when she goes to the hospital to see her son. And then she continues to follow that blood trail into the boiler room area, where we get another famous scene that they actually show on on her living room TV in New Nightmare. When she's calling out for Tina, but then Freddy is the one who pops up, and then Freddy, you know, another famous thing where he lifts up his sweater and slices across his own chest, and we get more of the yucky green stuff. And then, you know, to try to snap herself out of it, she's, you know, can tell herself, this is not real, this is a dream, this is all a dream, and then presses her forearm up against a steaming pipe, and that's what snaps her out of her sleep, and she wakes up, and then she's outside of the school, you know, emotional, trying to maintain her composure, and then she sees the burn on her arm, meaning, you know, it's not all just in her head, you know, 'cause that's the running thing with the adults, especially. They're trying to convince those kids having these nightmares, because they're all having the same nightmares of the same person. They're all having nightmares of Freddy, and the parents are trying to convince them that they're all just going crazy, you know, as they always do in these kind of movies. You know, I don't know why parents have to be dicks in these movies. So then, you know, she decides that, you know, I'm going to try to get him. I'm going to try to pull him out of the nightmare, and I need, you know, my boyfriend Glenn to be there, you know, to help me. And, you know, but then he falls asleep, fails, and that, and her pillow gets messed up, and she had gone to visit the, you know, Tina's boyfriend in prison to talk to him, and he was describing what he had seen when Tina died, and he was describing the nightmare that he was having, and that's when she realized all of them are having these nightmares of the same guy. And little by little, she starts putting the pieces together. And then when she has the, when she wakes up from the nightmare where, you know, Freddy slashes her pillow, and she sees the feather from her pillow floating around, and that's when she realizes, you know, oh my god, he's in danger. I gotta go to the prison, make sure that he's safe. And when she gets there, it's too late, and he's dead because Freddy took the bedsheet and made him hang himself in the jail cell. So yeah, so that's death number two in this movie. And then I'm skipping over a lot of stuff, and I'm mainly talking about the, you know, kills and the gore and the important parts of the story. And then when she goes to a sleep, the mom sends her to a sleep clinic kind of thing, and they examine her for a little bit. And then when she's in her nightmare and they finally wake her up, she, from under her bed sheet, she pulls out Freddy's hat. And she was saying, like, you know, I snatched this off of his head. And they're all trying to, again, convince her that she's going crazy, that she's crazy, that none of this makes any sense. And that's when the mom finally decides, you know what, I'm going to tell her the truth. You know, and then she tells her the story about Freddy, you know, that he killed these children, and, you know, went to a trial, you know, the judge and the attorney, they became famous, and but because they fucked up and didn't sign the warrant, he, you know, was able to go free. So then her and the other parents tracked him down, and they burned him down. They burned his house down, burned him alive, and they're in the boiler room of the basement of this house, of Nancy's house. She had Freddy's glove, you know, stashed away, you know, I guess as like a souvenir or safekeeping or just a reminder of what they did. And that's when, you know, she decides, I'm going to try to pull him out of the nightmare world so that I can kill him. And that's what she again asks. I'm going to put the glove back on now. She asks her boyfriend, Glenn, you know, stay awake and help me, so that, you know, when I pull him out of the dream, you can cold cock the fucker, is what she said. But that, as we fans of this franchise and this film know, we already know that does not happen, because Glenn falls asleep and we get one of the coolest deaths I've ever seen in any horror film, where Freddy pulls him through the bed and we get the blood shooting right out of the bed, all over the ceiling. Is so fucking cool. One of the coolest effects I've ever seen in a horror movie. I think, honestly, if I had to make a list of 10 favorite horror movie kills, that would probably be in my somewhere in my top five. Not exactly sure where, but it would definitely be in the top five. It was just, it's just one of the coolest. It's one of the coolest visuals of a death in a horror movie ever. You know, just the especially when it goes in, when it goes slow motion as the blood is flowing through there. It's so cool, such a cool thing. Oh yeah, and also I skipped over the bathtub scene. When Freddy tries to pull her through the tub, was a really cool effect. And I think they have a behind the, you know, they have some behind the scenes stuff on the Blu-ray that I should check out, see if they show how they did that effect, because I'm really fascinated by it. And also the other cool effect, before Tina's death, when you see Freddy coming through the wall above Nancy while she's sleeping, that was really cool. And they have a collectible statue of that that I would, if I could find it again. I remember seeing, I think, on Amazon. I'm gonna try to look for it again. It was really cool. And I think also that there's a Funko Pop of the bathtub scene with Freddy's hand coming out. I think I remember that, unless I'm confusing it with the Billy Madison bathtub Funko Pop. Either way, I'm gonna look it up. Yeah, that's, you know, another cool scene. But then, yeah, after the blood scene, that's when Nancy, because she had apparently been reading some books about setting traps and stuff, decides to home alone her house and set up traps for Freddy so that she can try to trap him and kill him, or at the very least get her dad to come arrest him. You know, like, she puts, like, you know, like a little tripwire for him. She has a sledgehammer that's gimmicked over her bedroom door that's, you know, once he opens the door, it'll boom, hit him right in the chest. And whew, I mean, I know it's just a movie, but, and he's a, you know, a fictional character and all that, but sledgehammer to the chest would kill a human being, legitimately. At the very least, would just crack their sternum. Or not crack, it would shatter their sternum. Because the way it looks, it's like the sledgehammer just boom, right in the middle of the chest, and yeah, that would kill a person. If it would, you know, sledgehammers are no joke. I've swung sledgehammers before. They are heavy. Yeah, and then she booby traps the living room lamp with gunpowder so that that'll set him on fire, or at least burn him a little more. And then she gets him to follow her into the basement where she sets him on fire there. And another very cool visual. And that's when she calls over her dad, who had been across the street attending to the situation with Glenn. And, you know, they finally go over there, and he, you know, again, still not believing anything that was being told to him by her. You know, she realizes that he had escaped from the basement because she had locked the door on him. And she sees the footprints, the fiery footprints, you know, tracking all the way upstairs. And that's when she realizes, oh no, it's, you know, going after mom. And he kills the mom as well there. And the dad sees that. And that's when he, you know, finally realizes she was telling the truth all along. And then we get another cool visual. One of my other favorite visuals is that when Freddy comes up through the bed sheet and just rips it open, which, again, they do that again in New Nightmare. And another part that I skipped over was that during the nightmare before the Riley's death, Tina's boyfriend's death, when she runs up the stairs, gets the little quicksand effect. They do that in New Nightmare as well. But anyways, yeah, when he comes out, and that's when she says, I know how to defeat you. I know your secret. You know that this is all a dream. You're not real. You know, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I take away all the energy I gave you. I want my mother back. I want my friends back. So then he tries to lunge at her, but then he fades away. She opens the door, and it's daylight. She's outside in front of the house. Her mom is right there. And then her boyfriend pulls up in his convertible car with Tina and Tina's boyfriend. And then the convertible top pops over, and it has the stripes of Freddy's sweater on there. And then everything starts going crazy. The windows start going up. The car starts driving itself. They're all freaking out. And then we get that final famous shot where Freddy busts through the window on the front door and pulls a mannequin version of Nancy's mom through the window. And then we get the creepy little girls that we saw at the beginning of the movie also doing the jump rope with the little jingle. 1, 2, Freddy's coming for you. 3, 4, better lock your door. 5, 6, better crucifix. 7, 8, better stay up late. 9, 10, never sleep again. So good. And also the music that they use, the score, was very 80s. It was, but I enjoyed it. And I mean, of course, this film was from the 80s. So, of course, the music reflected that. And, you know, of course, this film, you know, in the legacy of Wes Craven, this probably might be considered his masterpiece. Can't really argue against that. For other people, it would be Scream. And I do love the Scream films as well, and I know they're working on Scream 5 right now, so we'll see how that works out. And I remember somebody saying, I think Neve Campbell had said something about that, you know, that this film honors Wes Craven's legacy. So we'll see how that goes, because, you know, I love the first one, and I like the second one, third one was okay, and I enjoyed the fourth one more than I enjoyed the third one. So we'll see how I feel about the fifth film. I really do need to revisit the rest of the Nightmare franchise. You know, I'd had the box set saved on my Amazon wish list, but you know, they had the first film on sale at Walmart for like $7, and I was not gonna pass that up. So you know, maybe I'll get the other films eventually. Maybe I will get the box set and just like sell this one somewhere. You know, we'll see. You know, and I do want to try to get that Friday the 13th. Set from shit, what was the name of the company? Scream Factory. The Scream Factory anthology set of Friday the 13th. I would like to get that one. It's a little pricey, but you know, maybe tax season I'll pick that one up. What can I really say about this film that other better people, more qualified people haven't already said? So that's going to do it for this edition of Retro Film Reviews. I do thank you very much for tuning in, for watching on YouTube, or if you're not watching on YouTube and you're listening to the audio-only version on Spotify, Google Podcasts, CastBox, Radio Public, Breaker, or Anchor, thank you very much for listening on those as well. You can subscribe to all of those if you're not already. The direct links to all of those will be in the description to this episode. And if you'd like to, you know, hit me up on my social medias, Twitter, Instagram, Vero, my wrestling fan page that I have on Facebook. You can check all the direct links to those as well. And also I am on Snapchat as well. Also, so if anyone wants to check me out, it's Fozitude, just like I am on Instagram and Vero. So you can check me out on there. You know, just type it in the search if you want to. Just Fozitude. My Snap feed is pretty boring, so yeah. But if you don't mind boring, you can follow me on there. And also, if you want to support the Minute Tights Podcast Store, you can do so by checking out the Minute Tights Podcast Store. I'm having a little fumbled up night tonight. If you want to support the Minute Tights Podcast, do so by purchasing some merch in my store. That link is in the description below. There's a sale going on as I'm recording this. I don't know how long it's going to be going, but take advantage of that when you can. Or you can also join my Patreon for $1 a month. That link is in the description as well. And also my friend Julie, her GoFundMe for her legal fees for her court case, that is still up right now as well. I believe so. Let me double check that. Sorry about that. Recording got cut off at that point, so yeah. But the link is still active for the GoFundMe, and yeah, if you can contribute to that, it would mean a lot to me. It would mean a lot to her. But yeah, thank you so much for watching, for listening, for tuning in, for subscribing. And I love and appreciate every single one of you who do. I truly and genuinely do. And hope you're staying safe, taking care of yourselves and your loved ones. This has been Retro Film Reviews for the Mennonites Podcast. I am Julian, and I will see you all next time. Bye-bye.